So again this morning, I'm Arden Barden from Lutheran Bible Institute, and we share our devotion, our Bible study this morning on spirituality and aging. This morning we want to look at the theme, A Wing and a Prayer, using Psalms 71 and Psalm 90. We'll start with 71, we'll start with the prayer first. Yesterday I shared with you a kind of a holistic approach to Christian spirituality, suggesting that we have four relationships: a relationship with God, a relationship with ourselves, a relationship with others, and a relationship with our world, our environment, most immediate environment being our physical bodies and physical selves, but going outward from there to larger environments. So with those four relationships in mind, we'll use that same framework to consider some things in this psalm this morning, which I view as a prayer of an older person. I think I'm not alone in that, but I think it is a prayer of an older person. So if we can bring some of the discussion that we've had on aging into the psalm and see how we might find expression of the prayer using a framework that we've had already. So we look at the introductory verses first, verses 1 through 3. As I read those, please look, first of all, for the repeated themes. What's repeated in there? So follow with me as I read. In thee, O Lord, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In thy righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline thy ear to me and save me. Be thou to me a rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me, for thou art my rock and my fortress. All right, let's start with those words and see what we, what do you hear repeated in there?
Me and
my. Okay.
Refuge.
So me and my, a personal prayer, all right, and then some themes about descriptions of God. Refuge.
Rock.
Fortress. Taking that much, what kind of a feeling or image does that give us of God?
Strength. Protected.
Strength, protection.
Secure.
Security. Okay, really a foundation.
Someone to listen.
Okay, yes, a sympathetic ear, absolutely. When incline thy ear to me, is a sense of listening. There's an ear on this rock and fortress. I walked with one of you on Monday a few hundred yards up the way here, and we went over by the river, and in the middle of the river is a huge boulder. A nice, really nice one. I don't know if there's... See, I think it's such a thing as nice rocks, and I like this one and the way it's placed. But it had a message to me that even in the spring runoffs and the torrents of the stream in the spring, I bet you that thing doesn't move. It looks like a wonderful rock. And I thought of the psalm when I saw that, and I think of that today as I think of the psalm. A rock, a fortress, something solid. And so we're coming to God. As we start off the prayer, we start here, verses 1 to 3. Relationship with God, and that's where, if we're going to bring ourselves to it, and I think the you, I mean the me and the my, is a personal prayer. There is a sense that one might see this prayer as a prayer of the people of Israel, as they are facing attack from enemies at a certain point in their history, and maybe got used at different points in their history. But the imagery of aging is used to develop that, if that's the case, or if it's a prayer of an older person, some of the imagery of battle is used to develop the sense of the prayer for older persons. Okay, next few verses. Rescue me, O my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and cruel man. For thou, O Lord, art my hope, my trust, O Lord, from my youth. Upon thee have I leaned from my birth. Thou art he who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of thee. Okay, I want to see where we are with that. In terms of our diagram on the board, where does that seem to take us in terms of our whole person understanding of aging? Some might suggest the self. I was thinking that if from the sense the attack is from others and the cruel man, I was thinking that it would take us in our vulnerability or security in this area. Okay, and so there's a sense that one is calling upon God for refuge and strength and security as one faces vulnerability with other people. I can tell you about a woman in the parish that I served in Yakima. Was very, very upset as she called me one day and we got together and talked about it, and we had to do it again a couple of times. She was on her way home one afternoon and a young man pulled up behind her at the stop sign and got out and came up, running up to her car window and banging on her car window, and was very insistent that there was something wrong with her car in the back and that she needed to have it attended to immediately. And he was just the person to do it. And it was just such a rush thing, and she was so startled by it, and the communication was not clear. He just basically brought this kind of barrage of statements and produced in her a sense of fear and concern about herself and her safety, and whether she could make some decisions about this car. Actually convinced her to turn the car over to him so that he could go and repair it. Well, he came back about 2 hours later with the car and then presented her with a bill for $25, which thankfully she paid him in with a check. And he went on his way, and as she went through the rest of the afternoon then, she finally began to settle down, and she went to a friend then who knew something about cars. He put the car on a hoist and examined it to see if anything had been done or damaged or anything done at all. And he couldn't find where anything had been touched or tampered with and couldn't see anything wrong with the car. So she was renewed that everything was all right. But here we have literally an attack from a cruel and unjust man, as we have here in the scriptures. And so in her frailty, she was 80-some at the time and doing very, very well in just going on the day-to-day. But here was some who presumed upon her vulnerability. In her later years, because of hearing, because of understanding, and that it takes some time to grasp things and a sense of control, just coming in upon those things to really take advantage of her. Well, we know that in our society we have all kinds of schemes and frauds, from purchasing of lots. That's been a big one. Purchasing of cemetery lots to prevail upon one's old planning or concern for the future in that way. Long-term care insurance. We've discovered that there have been schemes and frauds in that area. Maybe you know some others that people have lifted up. What about just the general care in our social system? Many older people feel that with limited income in retirement years, that there's a sense of oppression in society. That as things go on and get more expensive, that costs outdistance us, and that has a sense of oppressing people from retirement on. It makes managing our finances day to day and financial dependency is a threat to people. Well, that could go in this area, economic dependency. What are some other things that you might think of that are of a social vulnerability? We might think of just elder abuse itself. We know that there are people who take advantage in caregiving and housekeeping situations. We get into those things, and one of the things we need desperately is some kind of standards and system to help structure the hiring of people into homes, to assist with home care, some personal cares, or whatever level of help that's needed. Well, people come in, they steal. We've had people who write money out of checkbooks when they're given the care of checks. Doesn't need to be a stranger. Often it's a family member, a brother or a sister who's helping to manage finances, or a son or a daughter. And people presume to take those monies for themselves. Well, vulnerability, social vulnerability, yes?
I was just going to say that if you're, sometimes as you're growing older, you, I better use myself, I'll forget things. You know, I think I left my purse here and it's gone, or I think I left my something else, you know. Well, someone who is out to take advantage could, I think, could soon learn that you forget, that your eyesight isn't as good, that you are more or less dependent in some ways.
Yes, the attack from theft may come from forgetfulness, but we have to be careful we don't say it's my fault there. The people who go through and take purses from shopping carts, or just follow a person around until, if you're looking at some fabric, take a purse when you've laid it down to look at some fabric, or whatever the case may be, or try on a garment. It doesn't take much of a slip, and something can be gone that quickly. So yes, there are the things that we need to pay attention to, but the prowlers are out there, and so there are the cruel and unjust ones. Well, what's the prayer do? The prayer brings God into this concern. But then, as it's brought there, of course, assuming that the prayer is heard, and there is a comfort, what's brought back to God? Anticipating the response of prayer, and feeling the comfort from that prayer, praise is brought back to God. Seven and eight may be kind of transition. I have been as a portent to many, well, a sign or a threat of evil. Not sure just what this means. if I'm thinking of an older person, one way that I guess I could think of that is that older people, for younger people, serve as a reminder that age is happening. And some younger people don't like to do this. We know of studies that medical doctors, psychologists, clergy are people who have had difficulty serving older people because it reminds them of their own aging. And so that ageism sneaks in. Well, is that what it means here? That as an older person, I've been as a portent to many? Don't know. Exactly, but here is the sense of, doesn't make much difference. God is the refuge and strength. And to come back again to that assurance in the prayer, my mouth is filled with thy praise and thy glory all the day. Okay, next section. Do not cast me off in time of old age. Forsake me not when my strength is spent. For my enemies speak concerning me, those who watch for my life consult together, and say, God has forsaken him, pursue and seize him, for there is none to deliver him. Okay. Well, I don't know if you think you have people like that around. We've talked about it a little bit with the purse snatching, but what are we speaking to here as we grow older?
He sounds very lonely to me, like he feels alone.
Well, there's some loneliness in there, but what's the reason for that? When my strength is spent, looking at health? Sure, health changes that come upon us, and that's natural aging. In our society where we have viewed age as sickness, is an inappropriate way to view age. There is natural aging, and it's not bad, it's not sick. To not breathe as fast or as fully. You know, we do have a diminishing lung capacity. But that doesn't make us bad people or sick people. But it is a part of our aging. And muscular weakness. And bone changes. And our bones become more brittle as we age. And so we do have fear of falling or of getting knocked down, as sometimes happens. And so on and so forth. So there is a physical vulnerability that we need to be realistic about. The scripture is realistic about aging. Well, you don't have to be a frail elder. See, you don't have to wait till shut-in time or nursing home time for that to be a concern. I know of people who are in midlife or nearing retirement or early retirement for whom these are very real kinds of fears, because aging becomes a real fright to them. Well, here this is brought before God. Where will we receive a sense of strength in our physical weakness and vulnerability? How will we have a sense of protection that we're going to get there and back? God is our refuge and our strength and our fortress. And so that's what this prayer is doing. And indeed, it even alerts the fact there are people who are stronger who will take advantage of that. So the physical weakness will be attacked by those who have stronger bodies. Again, praise. Assuming that prayer is heard, a sense of the excitement of one's faith, the response of one's faith, praise comes back. And then we come to that in this section. O God, be not far from me. O my God, make haste to help me. May my accusers be put to shame and consumed with scorn and disgrace. May they be covered who seek my hurt. But I will hope continually and will praise thee yet more and more. My mouth will tell of thy righteous acts, of thy deeds of salvation all the day, for their number is past my knowledge. With my deeds of the Lord God I will come, I will praise thy righteousness, thine alone. We see in both of these sections that righteous acts are told. There's continuity with our life, such that in aging, one of the reasons that we can have confidence that God is with us and there's a refuge and a strength to call upon is because we can recount how God has been with us in years past. So we look back in verse 5, O Lord, from my youth. Even going back to the days of youth. And we'll see that again at the beginning of the next section. The activities and the things that have happened to me, God is with us all the way through. And so that gives me a sense that, boy, if it's happened then, I'll be able to remember those things and know that God is with me now and will be in the future. And there's a great deal of security and strength and fortressness in that. Indeed, there is. But it's not just my youth. Look back at verse 6. If that's not good enough, Lord, from my birth, I mean, even in those infancy years, I have to realize that God saw that I was cared for, and I survived whatever it was in my youth, and I grew up. And if that isn't enough, in my mother's womb, from conception, same verse, like Psalm 139, where God knows us. Wherever we were from the day of conception, God knows us. And so it's kind of like saying that, how can I bring all this stuff? Lord, you know who I am. And so you know all about me from day one, from conception one. So there's a sense that if God has been with me and carried me all that way, now I can bring the concerns as I grow in age also. Next section. O God, from my youth thou hast taught me, and I still proclaim thy wondrous deeds. Even to old age and gray hairs, O God, do not forsake me, till I proclaim thy might to all the generations to come. Thy power and thy righteousness, O God, reach the high heavens. Well, what might we see here? Can there be feelings, I brought out earlier, aloneness? or loneliness. We talked yesterday about self-worth. That can be always lowered, or self-esteem. We tend not to value ourselves. We think others don't value us. What other kind of depression? The most, and confusion, the two most disconcerting things about our own personal self and mental state as we go through older years. Biggest things to be dealt with. The image that we have. Ageism, someone said at the previous time that they felt like they were being condescended to, even in ministry and spirituality and aging, and the way that people tried to help and care. A lot of times it felt like they were being condescended, so that people decide what it means to be old and then they're going to fix it for you or do it for you. It doesn't feel very empowering. It feels like the power is being taken away. So that's another aspect of what happens to the self. People feeling discounted and discriminated. Well, what can we do with those kinds of feelings and concerns about ourselves as we grow older? Memory loss is one of the greatest things that people say. You know, I'll do well if I just don't think, if I just don't lose my mind. Think, you know, that feeling weak physically or those kinds of changes that come upon us, aches and pains, someone said yesterday. But people say, I'll put up with a lot of that. Just don't let me lose my mind. Because we see that too comes sometimes with aging and with special kinds of needs in aging. Natural aging, we don't lose our minds, but there is some functioning. Mental processes and nerve movement of the impulses on nerves and such as that do slow down slightly. And that's why memory becomes an issue and thought patterns become an issue. But it isn't the same as losing our mind. But people can take advantage of that, as with the woman I shared in the car. She just couldn't think fast enough to have an answer for this young guy. And it overpowered her. Well, what can we do? Bring it to God. And with that, again, feeling the meaning and the power of the prayer. It isn't, okay, I feel better now. It's that having had the sense that, okay, God is with us, but all of that comes back in praise. Always a word of praise in this. I love the interspersing of the various aspects of the parts of this prayer with praise back to God. Okay. So thou who hast done, rest of that verse and on now, thou who hast done great things, O God, who is like thee? Thou who hast made me see many sore troubles, wilt revive me again. From the depths of the earth thou wilt bring me up again. Thou wilt increase my honor and comfort me again. Some wonderful words there. And then again finishing with a whole section on words of praise once again, and the fact that we will share those thoughts and those stories. The tongue will speak of God's help. Quickly through this prayer of an older person, thoughts or responses from you now, as we've or questions that come to you, anything come to you that you'd like to?
There was something in there that you haven't touched on that bothered me, is that thought of retribution for the people that do us harm. Could you speak about that?
Okay, it's just a common theme in the Old Testament particularly that one of the ways that we're provided for is that our enemies are destroyed. I suppose this can be thought of in different ways, that it might just be a simple protection. For example, that a young man such as that would just be held away from the car. You know, I don't think it necessarily means that he would have to be killed. Maybe he could be changed in that way, and that would destroy his evilness. Some people use the language of spiritual battle, that the enemies that attack us and in our spiritual nature, that maybe that's the sense in which the enemy is destroyed. So that all the things that would take away from my sense of comfort and strength of God and my feeling secure in God, because it does seem that there are forces which try to undermine our faith and to increase my confidence that I'll do it, I'll manage. So one way to think about that might be that the demonic influence, we could say, or Satan's prowling around like a roaring lion, that kind of a sense of attack would be, that those enemies would be destroyed.
The individual wouldn't necessarily have to know of the retribution, though, would they? It could happen to whoever hurt them without their knowing that it was happening. Do you follow me?
Sure. It can be a legal retribution, too. In that sense of societal justice, if there has been an attack, don't we want the perpetrator to be set aside from society for a time, and hopefully not just to be punished, but maybe to be reformed in some way, I would hope. Yeah, go ahead.
Somewhere down the line, I mean, it doesn't have to be happen to me that I see that he is punished.
Yeah. I heard a thing, by the way, on retributive justice one time that I thought was useful, that an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth sense of retribution was there in God's law, not to justify the fact that we get somebody back, but to limit our response, that it not be greater, see, than what came to us. In other words, you know, there's a real sense that if something happened to me, put the guy away for life, you know. In other words, to keep it down, you know, not greater than what was done to us. Interesting sense about that retribution thing. Someone else had a comment.
When it talks of enemies, and when you think of enemies, maybe it's not necessarily the roaring lion kind. I think I work with a lot of elderly people, and some of the things is simply ignorance and thoughtlessness. You do not think that elderly people do not hear so good. You do not think that you do need to talk a little slower. You do not think that, you know, they might need a little bit more time because they do not move as quickly. And so I see some of the problems not just in being somebody that's really out to get them. There's a lot of thoughtlessness that goes into that.
If you've seen the things about Pat on television, or interviews with her, she's the one who did the college level study, master's level study, by going around, maybe it was a doctorate, I'm not sure, by going around, I think, to 120 some U.S. cities, and she made up as an older person, used a variety of disguises in different places and varying degrees of aging, really studied this. But indeed, it's an expression of this prayer. Because she was stepped on and pushed aside and run through and run over. People were so not just impolite and rude, but actually it was as if she were non-person at times. There's one I saw, a clip of a videotape where she was opening the door slowly to go into a store, and a person came around, and it was as if she were holding the door for this younger person. It wasn't open far enough yet, but they eased in sideways, bumped the door, and it actually pushed the door open and pushed her back. Very interesting how she was treated, and so she could report how we do treat older adults, our persons in varying degrees of aging, with such disrespect and insensitivity. And of course, in addition to that, she was attacked, I think, four or five times, beaten twice, I believe, And she was robbed on more than one occasion in different cities. So these things are real that are in this prayer. That takes a little farther from what you were talking about, but yeah.
In Matthew it says, "Come unto me, all ye that are weak and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me." And also it says in another place, "I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." Mm-hmm. They're pretty good words to stand on. Mm-hmm.
We had a little discussion in the first session about whether or not people in varying stages of aging feel forsaken.
Right.
And of course, with people of faith, there was some sense that people didn't feel forsaken. Well, I can just vouch from my own ministry and working with older adults, and I would say from midlife on, people in different stages, that these are all real experiences. And in fact, I can vouch for myself that there are some of these things that have touched me. And there are times when I felt forsaken. And I have felt more vulnerable. And I feel society is pressing in and things like that. Well, I've worked with people in retirement of loneliness or sometimes estrangement or sometimes conflict among parents and older parents and adult children. Just different kinds of things that make all these things very real. And people do feel like a lot more like Ecclesiastes. Life is tough and then you die, and it doesn't have much meaning to it.
Worthless.
There's life without...
You feel worthless.
Uh-huh. Life without faith is despairing. And so that's why Ecclesiastes, philosopher, I think, comes back. Remember the Creator in the days of your youth. So you start with faith, and it carries you all the way through, and you've got that to build on. I think that the philosopher there was reflecting that maybe life without faith, aging process without faith, can be despairing or you feel forsaken. So yes, I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. I think quite a lot of that must go back to our ego. Maybe it's our pride that's hurt if we seem to be ignored and sloughed off. And I think if we recognize a lot of it as that, then it's a lot easier to take. It's easier to forgive people and say they're just not non-thinking. They're busy going on with their own lives. And
we saw today, well, yesterday, more so today, the word power at times. And I think that's one of the issues. If we put self in the center of the circle, we are against all this. Will we hold up? Well, the self can feel quite powerless against all the things that we experience and all the changes that we go through. Self can feel quite powerless. So where can we find the power and the strength? Is to put Christ in the middle, and then we receive the strength of God as refuge and fortress and strength. I think that's true.
Then we have those people that meet you on the street and they smile and say, "Hello, how are you?" Open the door or something, and it just boosts you like nothing.
Okay, sure. How much ministry and concern and sensitivity does it take for us to help one another along the way?
Just a smile of help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel that there's even a next level of that, is that what I call, I define ministry as presence. Bringing Christ to bear in the life of another person doesn't always have to be word witness. It can be that kind of deed witness which says, you're a nice creation of God, and we care for one another, and it brings that presence to people. And it does. It's, the word resurrection in the Greek actually means just that, uplifting, lifting up. And so, we can resurrect one another's hearts and minds and bodies and spirits, and that's part of what it's about.
Mm-hmm. You almost answered everything I was saying. To me, it has always been important to stay in touch with others, to tell your troubles, and you give somebody else the opportunity to react to it, and then sharing it almost makes it only half the suffering. I think we are Christ to each other, I think that has been important to me. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not always possible when you get very old, when you are isolated, but there are communication things like telephone, and there are ways, I guess, like to hear what people do who are really alone, alone in the sense physically alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's speaking about what it means to share with one another and to give our concerns so that we can receive support. The Beatitude is, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. If we don't share our feelings about things, how can we receive the support in the process? Support groups are some of the biggest things that have developed. The irony about that, I think, is that in terms of Christian community, that's really what the New Testament community is designed to be about. A place where we can share some of our fears and wants, our needs and concerns and hopes, and receive a sense of support and strength and some of those smiles in the community where God dwells.
I think it's very significant to me that that is so much the rule here. You can't speak to anybody without getting that response.
Ah, mm-hmm. Sure.
Wonderful.
Yes, a type of place to be able to draw apart, where we know that Holden is that kind of place where we can go. Mm-hmm. I have found that in...
You can take it home and practice it. It will work too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Practice it at home, yes. Well, we do have programs now that have been designed in congregations such as Caring Community, which try to really help to open up congregations in that way. And I'm working with a program in our congregation to try to develop that. I know what it's meant to me to go to a community of learning, biblical studies such as Lutheran Bible Institute, and to be able to know that there's a place where one can share openly one's ignorance in the faith and one's concerns in the faith, and to know that there are others there who will support and walk with me as we learn together. Yeah, that's a great point. I like that. Okay, let's go to quickly the wing part of today's theme, Psalm 90. We won't spend as much time with Psalm 90. I subtitle it, The Facts of Life. I said that I think that the Bible is realistic about aging. We talked yesterday about grace and how grace really can give us a positive sense of our aging process. And that the Bible gives us a positive role of elder. Certainly those are true. But as we are persons on earth, this side of heaven, there's a realism about where we are. And I think the Psalm 90 needs to be looked at from time to time from that standpoint. I won't read the first few verses. They seem to speak almost from the point of view of God. God's perspective of the human existence. Turn back to the dust. We are creation. We are creature. We are not creator. And so, lest we should get so excited in our faith that we're going to live forever this side of heaven, we need to remember that, no, that's not true. There is a time to be born, and there is a time to die. And we have a limited time span, and we're all going that direction. We're glad when we're here, we would hope in the midst of this psalm, but we're time limited. And that's what this one brings out. Like grass. Grass in the morning, grass at noon, grass in the evening. Several psalms, Psalm 103 picks that up also, that our days are like grass and we flourish. But then our place, I love that, our place knows it no more. We're not there. The themes here, I believe, of the wrath of God and the anger of God, we need to temper that, I think, from what we might expect those words to mean. I see those as words of contrast. That for me, and what I would like in life, that this seems like a very upsetting thing for God. It seems like an angry God who would not give me everything in life here, that I would live forever and ever and wouldn't have to go through some of this stuff. It feels like the wrath of God or the anger of God. It feels like a judgment of God. Not so much as punishment, but what I call the facts of life. That we need to remember that this is the way it is. Okay, verse 9 and 10. For our days pass away under thy wrath. Our years come to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70. Or even if by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. A real perspective that life as we view it does have some limits. There's a framework to it. And we go through it. How long is that? Probably 70 years. You can expect a good 70 years if things go well. If they go really well, 80 years. Moses lived 120. In Genesis 6:3, it suggests that 120 is probably the lifespan. What I've read about in terms of some of the studies in cell division and trying to understand the process of aging, it appears that 120 is about maximum lifespan that we could ever expect. That if we could do everything to make us live well and good and keep all of our faculties, that still, somehow, there's going to be a natural death around 120. So it's an interesting thing that maybe that we're sort of clocked. There is a time span that is somehow realistic, and in our spirituality, that's something for us to remember and to be realistic about. In God's view, looking back at verse 4, you know, it's like 1,000 years. Ours is but a yesterday. In other words, how long is now? I think of the moment now, but as soon as a few moments ago, like I had the class last hour, and you know, that's kind of interesting to think. That's gone now. And it becomes a part of everything else that's happened at Holden this summer. But I can think of my lifespan. It's been now. It's been here in the midst of the 20th century. As soon as my lifespan's gone, what happens? In God's view, it just becomes a part of all the other lifespans that have happened. And we can lift up baseball players and football players in halls of fame and artists in museums. We can do some neat things that will remember a certain few individuals, but that's the closest that we can come to any sense of immortality. Most of us don't have halls of fame. Occasional family tree, maybe we'll be marked in somewhere. But 1,000 years, even, are but as a yesterday. As soon as it's gone, it's gone.
We live our life as a tale is told when it's over.
Uh-huh. Another chapter.
Yeah.
But there are new chapters to come, other chapters to be written. So we're a part of a larger picture and a larger story. Well, from God's view and from our view, the question is can that be an uplifting thing, or is that a kind of a confronting or upsetting thing? I don't know. That's probably depends on where we are. There is a request response of that. After the question is asked in verse 11, who considers the power of thy anger and thy wrath according to the fear of thee? In other words, if we might see that as a really harsh thing from God. And some people do, by the way, see that as a harsh thing. Death is always a negative, rather than as a change and a transfer into something new, and a new birth and a resurrection. So death is a harsh thing. Well, if we see that and raise that question, who considers that? What happens? What's the answer? The answer follows in verse 12, probably the most often quoted part of this psalm. So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Well, you might say, how can I number my days? How do I know how many are there? Well, I don't think it's so much to count our days as it is to make our days count. And that God will give us wisdom and meaning to the day that's here, and gladness and celebration. Where was that about the affliction? I lost...
15.
That's down in 15, yeah. So this, you know, teaching us in wisdom. Now we go through and we see a number of things that that we ask God to do. To satisfy us, gladness. Manifest your presence and your power, your glory. In other words, how can we have meaning to number our days? What makes each day count? That God would show us in it what things need to happen. And that's the conclusion of this prayer. So let's share that together. Return, O Lord, how long? Have pity on thy servants. I do recall that Bishop Cliff Lundy, during the terminal illness of his wife, wrote in a newsletter to all of us as pastors, he said, I discover that the real issue in Scripture isn't so much the why questions as I thought. It's the when questions. How long? You know, how long do we endure this? And when will it end? And it was interesting to think that it's nice as we get all intellectual about things. We like to know why and to pursue the why answers. But in the midst of life and thinking about lifespan and the things that are going on with us, the when questions tend to emerge as more significant. I thought that was a bit of wisdom from him, and appreciate that he shared that out of his struggle at that time.
Did he mean when does it end? Was that when?
Or? That's a good question. When does it end?
Yes.
When does we have relief? When is there rescue? When is there deliverance? When I feel forsaken, when do I feel relief from that? You know, shall this cup, can we pray, take this cup from me? No, it won't be taken, but okay, now I've gotten it off my chest and off my heart, and I receive the strength of God to go on through the journey. You know, that kind of that kind of thing. Yes?
It occurs to me, I'm trying to say this before I forget again, if we knew what was coming tomorrow, with myself, if I knew what was coming tomorrow, I might not want to do that. I might not, oh, no, not another, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How did I get into this? But anyway, so it's kind of a blessing in a way that our days are 24 hours at a time.
Uh-huh. Our days go one by one. How many times is it said, live one day at a time?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a gift that we have the day's own troubles are sufficient for the day. Enough, don't worry about tomorrow. There'll be more of those to come. So, how do we eat an elephant? A bite at a time. And I think that there's some way that that's the way we go through life. We don't need to worry about all that's going to come. But to let the days now, each day count more than trying to count the days. I think that this psalm is great in that. Well, let's go on and read through the rest of this. And then there may be some things that speak to you personally out of the last part of this. Feel free to speak from that afterwards. Satisfy us in the morning with thy steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Make us glad as many days as thou hast afflicted us, and as many years as we have seen evil. You know, kind of a prayer that says, balance things out. You know, I know that there are some trials and some challenges, but, you know, got to pray and give me a break. I hope I see some of both. Let thy work be manifest to thy servants and thy glorious power to their children. Show me, God, what you're about in my life and in the world. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands. Yea, the work of our hands establish thou it. As I want to make my days count, and I ask the Lord to teach me what the meaning of that is, give a blessing on who I am and what I have to give. It's a sort of a benediction for the days as we go through them. I like that closing. That sort of a change on the benediction. Favor, another word for grace. Let the grace of God be with me each day. More comments.
I don't know where I learned this, but yesterday is gone, today to the fullest, and tomorrow may not get here. I don't know where I heard it, but when you stop to think about it, it's about the way it is. We don't know about tomorrow.
Kind of keep a realism.
Make them do the most today.
Yes, that putting a blessing on our efforts. I think that's rather good because you work over something, you give it your best, you like to get a sense of accomplishment and approval. Establish our.
There is a word in gerontology. Probably can't see it very well. I wrote it rather quickly. Generativity. Called, and what that means is making a contribution to our world. Most all of us, it turns out, but older people have a deep concern that what they've done with their life and what they are still doing will make a mark. There'll be something that we've left as an impact, that the world will have some significance that we were here. Called generativity. Well, I think that that's what's meant here in the work of our hands. However I've done and been and whatever, bless that, Lord, and that will be significant for my lifespan. The 70, 80, 120, I don't know what it's going to be for each of us. We know that 85 plus is the fastest growing segment of our population. It's not unrealistic that many of us sitting here will see well into our 90s and into our 100s. Big group of centenarians now in our nation. So it's not unrealistic to be living that long. Bless the work of our hands in our days, our lifespan. Mm-hmm.
I realize that how important it is now, but I do not want to belittle the past. I think the past is very important. I think when you get older, memories are very important to you. And I don't think, though I would put more weight on the past too. I would not put that aside so much as it seems to be coming out here. That would be my point of view. My past is very important to me.
Uh-huh.
And I would think as you get older, you would somehow draw from it a little bit too, from memory. I don't know if you share that with me.
Yes. She's saying that we need to be cautious as we think about the present and the future in our lifespan, that we not diminish the significance of our past. Indeed, the events that we've experienced, the joys and the sorrows that have come into our life, the people we've met, the places we've been, the education we've had, whatever, as we saw before, from the years of birth to youth and so on, all of that is a part of what's made us who we are to this point. And so indeed, those people who have been significant in our photo albums, or the people sitting on our shelf, or the books that we have there at our bedside, or the record albums, the 78s, and the 45s, and now we go to record tapes, and now to CDs, and see life has progressed on. But whatever we've had that's been a part of us, yes, is significant. And indeed, those memories are there, I believe, to celebrate and to give thanks for those people and events and experiences, but also to rejoice that they are what has made us who we are now, indeed. Yeah.
It's significant to me that came up because in thinking of making out my will, I have a daughter who writes, and she's working on books and things, and I suggested that she take all my journals and all my books and take the things out of them that I have underlined and get a sort of a mosaic of what my life has been, write it up and make a copy for each of the children, and maybe they will know their mother better than
yeah.
They do now.
Know your insights from the things that you've gotten insight from. Mm-hmm. In a sense, sure.
That brought something to my mind. I'm writing a book, but I'm putting it on tape. probably only for my family. Mm-hmm. But they will be able to hear their mother's voice when they listen to it. Mm-hmm. I think the tape ministry is very effective.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good idea.
It's been my experience to see older people, aging people, avoid teenagers, but teaching senior high Sunday school class, one of the finest classes I had was when I brought an 80-year-old woman to class, and she just told the story of her life, and the young people were fascinated with it, and we had a hard time stopping the class because they had all kinds of questions, and I think young people are anxious to hear what life was like and how faith survived in that kind of life, and that kind of story is very important to young people.
Yes, I was trying to find the verse. We had it back in the previous psalm, I think. 71:18, till I proclaim thy might to all the generations to come. Indeed, that's one of the roles of the older person in Scripture, is to be the sharer of the interpreter of faith for life's story. See, if you want to know how to live life to the fullest of days, and to get fullness out of one's days, who do you talk to? Someone who's done it. And so that's a very significant role, and why I feel that we've got to do something about this business of retirement from church when we come to the age of retirement, is because we need those with lived faith to be sharing to the younger generation, and to be some of the teachers, instructors. That's how the faith is going to be passed on, in the most practical way. Never mind some of the theological things we bounce around. How does life fit and get into where we experience some of the stuff that we've had in these two psalms today? I wanted to comment on the memory thing, by the way, is that an interesting thing happens with memory. It still functions. There is something, I won't go into the intricacies of it, but that long-term memory continues to function better than short-term memory. And it's just part of the way that our brains function. Part of it is that, of course, those are things that we've rehearsed more. And we know that the things that we rehearse and repeat more stay with us longer. And short-term memory doesn't do that because we haven't had as much time to rehearse it yet. So instead of us saying, well, I've lost my mind, see, it's a natural kind of thing. It makes more sense that we're going to remember some of those things that were significant to us in earlier years, and some of those people and events. Something over here, someone here. Okay.
What do you say then? You haven't built your mind yet?
Built the empty, sure.
When you're 40 years old and you forget something, you're too busy, but when you get in the 60s and 70s, you say, well, that's old age.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to be careful about it. There's an ageism that can sneak in, and we might diminish ourselves and others with that. Memory can be an issue, but it always isn't. And we need to understand what's natural, and receive what gifts we have with it, and enjoy it. But okay, yes.
But as we remember how the Lord has brought us through things in the past, our faith grows stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm.
See, prayers in the Jewish, especially the Hasidic tradition, are based on the stories. So you would actually, if you're going to pray, you start out with remembering some way that God has been with you, and the victory has been won, or the concern heard in the past. Because that's a basis upon which you can then bring the concern and the prayer to God now, and to have the confidence that happened before will now. Look at the Hebrews chapter 11. Gives us a definition of faith, but then what does it do? It goes through and recounts all the people of faith, or a number of significant people of faith, so that we get an idea. Faith happened, worked with them. Faith happened, worked with her. Faith happened with him, and it worked. And so we can recall that, and that gives us the confidence and meaning of it for now. Well, you've been great. I think we're moving on toward 9 o'clock. You've got to have time to get to the next thing. Or 10 o'clock, I mean. And so, thank you.
Thank you.